Join me in the book of John, chapter 21. John chapter 21. We've been spending several weeks in the Gospel of John, and it's always my practice as I preach to spend a good deal of time in the Gospels. I think one of the things I've observed over the 37, 38 years that I've been preaching is that in many pulpits, the actual Gospels are preached very little. Jesus' name is mentioned a lot, but actually his life and ministry and teachings are given pretty short attention. I think that's just the opposite, not only of what the early church did, but of what the Lord himself and God in heaven intended. I love the stories of Jesus. I love the songs we sing about him. I was thinking as Mark was leading us this morning of a few of the songs we sing that encourage us along those lines. Tell me the story of Jesus right on my heart, every word. Wonderful story of love, tell it to me again. We need to be so familiar and so intimately knowledgeable both of Jesus' life and teachings that they will rise to our consciousness every time we're in situations where they're needed. I thought when I was in junior high, along about ninth grade, and they made us sit through driver's education class, and we had to watch those, not just the terrible films on people, what happened when people are in auto accidents, but all those other ones about left pedal, right pedal. You know, this is back when cars still had shifts in them instead of automatic transmissions, and so they were trying to teach us by watching films on shifting gears and braking and clutching and turning and all of that. Of course, they were trying to do what they could before they took their lives in their hands and put us out there in those real cars. Fortunately for me, I had the blessing of growing up on a farm, and so my first two or three years of driver's education took place on a tractor, where the worst I could do was run over the corn crop and ruin it before my parents ever trusted me to get in the pickup and even drive down that dirt road we lived on. But I'm mentioning all of that because we need to be trained in what's right before we're in a situation where we must use it. That's why we need to be constantly exposed to the teachings and the life of Jesus, because it trains us for our life as his disciples. And when we get to the end of the book of John, here's where we are. Jesus has risen from the dead. For us, that's old news. That happened 2,000 years ago. For his disciples, they're still just trying to comprehend that. For you see, up until the moment Jesus was arrested that night in the garden and taken away and went through a series of trials that night and early the next morning and finally is given over to the executioners to be nailed to a cross and crucified, up until that moment, his disciples believed everything was going to be different than this. They thought they were in Jerusalem with Jesus that week, the week of Passover, to see Jesus declare himself king and to see the Jewish people accept that proclamation and put him up on a throne and make him their ruler. And they had even been arguing among themselves who's going to be Secretary of State and who's going to be Secretary of Defense and who's going to be the Secretary of the Treasury and all of those things. They had no least concept that Jesus was going to be rejected by his own nation and that he was going to be killed. Therefore, when those things happened, their whole world, in effect, was shattered. And they had no idea what happens next. And so when 3 days later he rises from the dead, they couldn't believe it. It was inconceivable to them, even though he had told them beforehand numerous times it would happen. When he died on that cross, for them, their dream died. The dream of Jesus didn't die. That was the dream of Jesus, was to die and be raised, and then what's next? But for them, their dream of a coronated king with them having positions of high authority and so forth, that all died. And then when he's alive again, even after they start allowing themselves to believe it, because they are seeing him themselves, they're touching him, they're talking to him, they're eating with him, He's physically there with them. It's Him. They don't know what is next, because everything they thought was going to happen is already out the window. And now, on the day He's raised from the dead, He has appeared to them. He not only appeared to Peter personally that afternoon, but that night of the day He's raised from the dead, He appears to the 10 who are all gathered together in an upper room. A week later, they're together again, along with the one who was missing, Thomas, and He appears a second time to them. Now, there are other appearances that are going on as well, but these are the ones where it's to the group of disciples altogether. And now, the day He was raised from the dead, He had told them, or rather they were told by the angels, I guess, go on up to Galilee where He will meet you. Well, they stayed in town. The next week, they're still in town. But by now, in John chapter 21, at last they have gone up to Galilee to meet Him up there. So they've left Jerusalem. They've left that area. They've gone back up to this area they're so much more familiar with. This is back to their homeland. This is where they grew up. There along the shores of Galilee is where Peter and Andrew and James and John all had worked as fishermen with their families in the family businesses before Jesus had ever called them to be His disciples. And now He's told them to go back up there. And they are there on the shores of Galilee, that area Jesus had spent so much time together with them at. And they're waiting on Him. And John, who's writing many years later and is one of those 11 who are there, tells us this is the way it happened. John 21. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, called Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, that would be James and John, and two other disciples were together. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them. And they said, we'll go with you. So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. You know, John is being very abbreviated in his telling of the story, so there's all sorts of questions we don't have answered. Whose boat was it? Well, first of all, we know that that two different families of these men actually had fishing businesses right there on that lake, on that part of the lake, so probably it's just one of them's family boat that they're using. But John doesn't choose to tell us that. But they push out into the lake and they fish all night long and they caught nothing. Any of you who happen to be fishermen, and I'm not one, know that happens sometimes. But like the bumper sticker said, the worst day fishing is better than the best day working. So they're fishing. They're doing what they know how to do and what they enjoyed doing. But they caught nothing. Very early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore. Their fishing took place not way out in the deep of the lake, but right along the shore, just a few, dozens or maybe 100 yards or so off. That's where most of the fish they were catching would be found. So early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. And He called out to them, friends, have you caught any fish? No, they answered. So He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. How would some stranger standing on the shore when it's hardly daylight yet know anything about where the fish were in the lake when these men have been out there casting on the right side, the left side, the back side, the front side all night long and haven't caught anything? And these men are professionals at this job. And when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple, whom Jesus loved, said to Peter, it's the Lord. In other words, John, the one who's writing this, says to Peter, that's Jesus on shore. And as soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. And the other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. And Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish you have just caught. Now, I've heard my grandfather was a big fisherman. Not professionally, but he just loved to fish. And he would go out and fish all night. And he'd always come in the morning with a big appetite. A few times we got to stay with him. When he would go out fishing, he'd come in the next morning expecting my grandmother to have a big breakfast fixed for him. Well, these men come in, and here's breakfast prepared for them already. Jesus has prepared it. And Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you have just caught." So Simon Peter climbed aboard and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. I've yet to see the fisherman who doesn't know exactly how many fish he caught every time he caught one. If he caught seven, he caught seven. He'll tell you that. You just don't find the fisherman that says, "Well, how many did you catch last night?" "Oh, I don't know, a few." He knows. He may be being bashful about it, but he knows how many he caught. That's why they counted them. They're fishermen. They just do that automatically. They counted, and there were 153 large fish. The net was full. They couldn't even pull it up into the boat. They had to drag it up on the shore. They counted the fish, 153. And Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." And none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" For they knew it was the Lord. And Jesus came, took the bread, and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. So this is the third time in the 3 weeks that Jesus has appeared to them. But there's a few things that are sort of up in the air here that haven't been dealt with yet. So far, Jesus has just been appearing to them and letting them see and hear that it's really him. And even has explained to them and showed them from the Old Testament scriptures that the prophecies said this would happen. But there's some other things that have not been dealt with yet. One thing that has not been dealt with is, what now? They've had all these other expectations that are dashed. It's clear Jesus is not going to sit on a throne in Jerusalem and become the king of the Jews. And they're not going to have positions of authority. But no one has explained to them, what does the future hold? What does Jesus want them to do? They have heard him say several times already since his resurrection that he is returning to heaven. So he's not going to be around much longer, though they don't know exactly how long. But there's one other very big thing that hadn't been dealt with as well. And that is what happened the night he was arrested and tried. There is the matter of all the disciples running away, abandoning him, the only exception being John, who actually had gone into the high priest house where the first trial was held. While that trial was on, John was in there. All the others were not to be found, except for Peter, and he was outside in the courtyard. And that's a very big thing that needs to be dealt with too, isn't it? For that night, Peter three times was asked by someone else, "Aren't you one of Jesus' disciples?" And he, even with cursing, denied that he even knew who Jesus was. But now, for 3 weeks, Peter has seen Jesus. This is at least the fourth time. And he and Jesus apparently haven't talked about that yet. So this is a very important thing that's going on here. I think, and this is just my thinking on this point, I think they're considering the possibility that they're going to have to return to their previous occupations. Is the dream over? Is it all done? What to make of this? Yes, he did wonderful things. He did miracles. He spoke like no one has ever spoken before. He fulfilled the prophecies of the Old Testament. But he didn't fulfill our expectations, at least the ones they had at that moment. And he hasn't told them what's coming next, and so maybe it's time to pick up the fishing gear and go fishing again. Is that what the future holds? And what about this whole thing of this rift that surely Peter felt between him and Jesus? He's carrying around this great burden of guilt for having denied even knowing Jesus the night he was arrested and tried. And that hasn't been dealt with yet. Jesus is treating him like he still loves him. Jesus is treating him like he's not holding that against him, but Peter's holding it against himself. And I think the others are holding it against themselves as well, because Peter wasn't the only one who abandoned Jesus that night. So now here they're gathered at breakfast after a long night of fishing, and Jesus has performed a miracle. He's had to be mindful of what had happened back when he had first called them to be his disciples. He had walked along the shore of Galilee while they were out fishing, and he had told them to come and follow me, and I will turn you into fishermen of men. And they had left their nets and had become his disciples, and now suddenly here they are back at the beginning again. And it says in the Scriptures, when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, Simon Barjona. That's what Jesus called him back at the beginning. About halfway through Jesus' ministry, Jesus had actually changed Peter's name, hadn't he, to Peter, and said, you will be called Peter. But here suddenly on this occasion, Jesus is calling him by that name from back at the beginning again. Simon, son of John, son of Jonah, do you truly love me more than these? It's the moment that Peter has been both waiting for and dreading. Jesus is now ready to talk about it. You see, before that night, when he had betrayed Jesus three times, Jesus had already told his disciples, I'm soon going to be arrested, and you're going to all be offended by this, and you will deny me. And Peter had said, Lord, even if everybody else abandons you, I won't. Even if all these others deny you, I'll never deny you. And it was such a short time later when that's exactly what he did. And so Jesus says, Simon, do you really love me any more than these others do? It was clear by his actions, and Peter knew it, that he was very fallible just like the others were, and he had failed just like the others had. At least by his actions, it didn't seem that he had loved Jesus any more than they did. And Simon said, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He doesn't make the boast this time that he loves Jesus more than the others. And he doesn't try to make any excuse for his failings, but he does affirm that he does love Jesus in spite of what he had done. And Jesus said, feed my lambs. We don't know how long a time passed or whether this happened immediately after the first time, but soon at least, Jesus says again, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? I want you to notice that Jesus is slightly changing the words of his questions as this goes along here. And the changes are even more evident in the original Greek language, or the Aramaic, as the case may be, that Jesus and Peter would have been speaking in than it is in our English. The second time Jesus says, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? And he answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. You ever had a conflict with someone else, some falling out, so to speak, sometime when harsh words were said or things that were done that shouldn't have been done, feelings were hurt, a relationship is injured or damaged, and yet you know that those two people still love each other. But you also know that something is going to have to be done to fix the problem, to heal the fracture, to make wholeness come back into that relationship. You can't just hope that time will make it all go away, because it doesn't. When angry words, ugly words, bad things are said or done in relationships, those have to be dealt with. They do not just go away, even when the people still love each other. So Jesus asked him a second time, do you truly love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Take care of my sheep. And then a third time he said to him, Simon, son of John. I think it's interesting that Jesus does not accord him the title of rock here. He's looking at Peter as the man he is, not as, which is, Peter means rock. And when Jesus gave him that name, it was because that's what he saw that Peter would one day be. But folks, right now, Peter is no rock. He's just Simon. And that's what Jesus is saying. And the third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him a third time, "Do you love me?" And he said, "Lord, you know all things, and you know that I love you." I have to think that even a big, strong fisherman like Peter by now, surely the tears were rolling down his cheeks. He did love Jesus, but he had failed himself, and he had failed the one he loved so badly that night. And he wanted so desperately for that to be all taken care of and healed. And he didn't want that to ever happen again. You see, Peter was asked three times that night, was he a disciple of Jesus? And he said no. Now today, early this morning, he's been asked three times by Jesus if he loves him. And he said yes. I don't think the imagery and the symbolism of that was lost at all on Jesus, and probably in later times wasn't lost on Peter either. "Yes, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." And John tells us, Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And then he said to him, "Follow me." In a sense, Jesus was taking Peter back to square one. He wasn't saying that Peter hadn't grown and wasn't better than he was when they had first met, but he's simply saying, "Peter, I'm bringing you back to where we began when I called you to follow me. And so now I'm there with you again, and I'm asking you again to follow me." It'll only be after this, with his disciples, that Jesus will start giving them the various renditions of what we call the Great Commission. That's when he starts telling them what the future holds for them. That their job from this point forward is not to be fishermen, but to be fishers of men. That from this point forward, their job will be to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And go make disciples of all nations. To preach repentance and remission of sins for all men, beginning at Jerusalem. But that's all going to happen in the hours and days and weeks after this point. He has to get them back to the point they were before they had all denied him and ran away. And he's just done that. John is often called the apostle of love, because when you read the writings of the other apostles we have and of the other gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they don't focus nearly so much on what Jesus said about love, but John does. It's John that tells us that God loved the world so much that he gave his one and only Son. It's John who tells us that men don't come to Jesus because they love darkness instead of righteousness. It's John who tells us that the Father in heaven loves Jesus and is pleased with what he is doing. It's John who tells us that Jesus, the night he was betrayed, while they were at supper together, that Jesus, to show his disciples how much he loved them, actually stripped off his clothes down to the clothing of a servant and actually took a towel and a basin of water and washed their feet. And in doing that, he was showing them how much he really loved them. It is John who tells us that Jesus told his disciples, "By this will all men know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." In fact, John records Jesus having said that on five different occasions. It's John who lets us know that Jesus told his disciples that if they loved him, they would do what he told them to do, what he commanded them. And again, John records that on five different occasions, Jesus having said that. And it's only John who tells us what happened there on the shores of Galilee that morning when Jesus asked Peter, did he love him? And Peter affirmed three times that he did. And each time after Peter said that he loved him, that Jesus then told him, if you love me, then take care of my sheep. Take care of the little ones, the lambs. Take care of the big ones, the sheep. Jesus already was predicting what the future held for Peter here. That would be to take care of all those who would come to believe in Jesus. He even went ahead to tell him that when he's old, that he would actually give his life for Jesus. Peter is still smarting so deeply for having not been brave enough to admit he was even a disciple of Jesus that night. He abandoned Jesus out of fear. But Jesus gives him some assurance that in the future, when you're old, you will die for me. Somewhere in between history and legend, we have the record that when Peter was old, he was arrested in Rome and was crucified because he would not give up his faith in Jesus Christ. He was not going to deny him again. The question for us is right here, and Jesus is asking it. Do you love me? Do you love me? Jesus has already told his disciples that if they really love him, they'll love one another. He's told Peter here that if he really loves Jesus, then he'll be busy loving those who follow Jesus and taking care of them, feeding them, shepherding them, taking care of them. It's very interesting that years later, Peter writes two letters that we have copies of. In our New Testament, we call them 1 Peter and 2 Peter. At the end of that first letter, in 1 Peter chapter 5, he starts that last part of his letter by saying that I am a shepherd under the great shepherd. And I'm now writing to you others who are shepherds of God's people and telling you to take care of the Lord's people. What happened here this morning wasn't lost on Peter. He became that shepherd. He became also that fisherman that he was supposed to be. For he stood up on the day of Pentecost just a few weeks later and along with the others preached the first message of who Jesus was and what God was doing through him and what the whole business about a crucifixion and then a resurrection meant. And thousands of people responded to that and wanted to become disciples of Jesus and were baptized that day. Peter caught more fish that day than he'd ever caught on Lake Galilee. And that was only the beginning. So when Jesus asks us, do we love him? By asking us that, he's acknowledging that we may have failed. That we can still be those who love the Lord even when we failed him in some way. But there needs to be some reconciliation that takes place. And then we need to get about the business he's given us of taking care and loving each other and doing what he commanded us to do. Do you love me? Peter answered the question that morning. We need to answer it today. We have an invitation song. It invites us to think about our life and our relationship to God, especially to Jesus, who was sent by God from heaven to die on a cross to make it possible for us to have our sins forgiven and to be right with God again. But in return for that forgiveness, he's given us a job to do. That job is to obey him and to love one another. Where do you stand in all that today? If there's any way we can help you in your following Jesus, please come forward now and let us know how while we stand up and sing.